The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. NetSuite by Oracle brings accounting, finance, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce costs everywhere. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. So head to netsuite.com/wallstreet right now.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Monday, March 25th. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. Coming up on today's show, Amazon is facing new e-commerce rivals in the U.S. Temu and Shein, both companies with Chinese roots, are coming for Amazon's crown. WSJ reporter Sebastian Herrera tells us what Amazon is doing to fend them off. And then, a number of companies are developing brain implants as a way to help patients operate computers with their thoughts. WSJ Science Bureau Chief Joe Craven McGinty recently saw one being put in a patient's brain. She'll tell us about the surgery and the promises of this groundbreaking technology. But first, Temu and Shein have seen their popularity in America rapidly grow over the past few years. Both companies offer bargain prices, and Temu is spending billions of dollars on advertising. That's not great news for Amazon, which wants to maintain its dominance in e-commerce. WSJ reporter Sebastian Herrera is here to tell us what Amazon is doing to push back. Sebastian, you report that Temu and Shein have, for now, replaced Walmart and Target as Amazon's central competitive focus. How is Amazon approaching this new competition?
So it's focusing on what it sees as its advantages, which is fast shipping and reliability. It's expanding same-day delivery on millions of items, on products like electronics. And it's also exploring promotional campaigns that could tout its reliability and fast delivery. Amazon's recent ads have really focused on touching on the emotions that people can feel when shopping on Amazon. And you contrast that with the Temu ads, which have really focused on just how cheap their items are and their slogan, shop like a billionaire. So Amazon believes that if it can remind customers that there's no other place you can go in America for really quick delivery, for brands that people know, that it can stay in a competitive advantage.
What has Amazon said about trying to stave off these competitors?
So it says that it does pay attention to competition, but that it is really focused on its customers. And it really thinks that its selection too is unbeatable. It's trying to play to its strengths. And it's built out this massive warehouse network in the US that is very difficult to replicate. It would take years for Temu and Shein to get to that place.
You know, in the years that Amazon has been around, it's obviously faced a number of competitive threats. How has it handled these in the past?
We've seen Amazon buy competition before. So years ago, when diapers.com was getting popular, it ended up buying its parent company, Quidsi, after trying to compete with them. And we've also seen Amazon try to replicate the success of others. So when it was facing a lot of competition from furniture seller Wayfair years ago, it created a whole team to study Wayfair and replicate some of its strategies. And then also years ago when Instacart was getting really hot, it stood up a whole business in a matter of months called Prime Now and launched an app for it that was devoted to getting toiletries and other items like that delivered quickly to people's houses. Prime Now eventually got folded into Amazon's greater grocery delivery strategy.
Are there risks in being so focused on the competition?
There definitely are. They don't want to overreact to competition. And it wants to be careful also because it's seen other e-commerce threats in the past, like Wish, for example, is an e-commerce company that came on years ago. It had a lot of success, but right now it's really struggling. So it's seen other e-commerce competitors have these hot streaks and then basically burn out. And so while they try to respond in some ways, they also are trying to be patient and play the long game.
That was Journal reporter Sebastian Herrera. Coming up, why did a patient choose to get a temporary implant put in his brain? That's after the break.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. NetSuite by Oracle brings accounting, finance, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce costs everywhere. Now through April 15th, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program. So head to netsuite.com/wallstreet right now.
A number of companies are working on brain implants that can help patients communicate seamlessly with computers using their thoughts. One of those companies is called Precision Neuroscience. Initially, the company hopes to treat patients with severe paralysis who can't use their hands or arms to operate a computer. They say there's a huge market for this because it would help these patients be more independent. But making an implant that can do this requires a lot of testing. WSJ Science Bureau Chief Joe Craven McGinty recently saw one of those tests, an operation on a patient in Philadelphia. She joins me now with more. Joe, what was the intended purpose of the operation?
Okay, so this particular company, Precision Neuroscience, is doing a series of clinical studies where they temporarily implant their interface on patients' brains. And what they're doing is refining the algorithm that they've written that actually reads those brain signals and turns it into computer code. So the more patients they have, the more refined their algorithm can be.
What does the implant look like?
It's encased in a thin polymer. So the device itself is thinner than a human hair, but it's about a half inch wide and about 5 inches long. One end of it is electrodes, and it is the electrodes that are placed on the surface of the brain. The other end is a connector, and it will eventually connect to a package of computer chips that will rest between the scalp and the skull. And those chips will be wired to a battery and antenna in the patient's chest. And all of this will deliver the brain signals to an AI app that will convert the brain signals into computer code. It's all beneath the surface of the skin, and it's all wireless.
Tell me about this patient who was willing to get this implant in their brain.
The patient's pretty remarkable. His name is Jeffrey Kiefer. He's 71 years old. He's a resident of Hilton Head, South Carolina. He is retired, but he is the former vice president and CFO of DuPont. He was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease 17 years ago and has been on medication since then. The primary reason for his surgery was to have something called deep brain stimulation. So he was having a permanent device installed in his brain to treat his Parkinson's symptoms. That process was going to last probably 4 hours, roughly. In addition, while his brain was open, he's agreed to let a brain-computer interface be placed on his brain for about 25 minutes in order to participate in this experiment. He will probably never personally benefit from this device. He's just a big believer in research. Since his diagnosis with Parkinson's, he's served on a number of boards that are devoted to Parkinson's research. He's contributed a small fortune to Parkinson's research, and for a time he chaired the Michael J. Fox Foundation and remains a member of the board.
What are the potential risks of getting this experimental implant?
One of the aims of this particular implant is to be minimally invasive, and there aren't many risks. The biggest risk that I'm aware of is the low risk of infection. You do have an incision in your skull. A device is being placed on the surface of your brain. It's done, of course, in a sterile operating room, but the risk would be the potential for infection.
What does one patient tell the company about how their device works? What are they looking for?
The point is to verify that they are able to read the patient's thoughts in real time. So in the course of the experiment, the patient performs a series of gestures, rock, paper, scissors, as they appear on a computer screen, and he's physically performing that. This is something, obviously, a paralyzed patient wouldn't be able to do. So it lets the researchers see in real time what the physical manifestation is and what the brain signals look like. Then they tell him to not move his hands, to merely think the gestures. And so they're able to compare what it looks like in your brain patterns to actually move and to think the same gesture. And then finally, they had him speak. So they can cross-reference all of this material. They're amassing neurodata for the entire series of studies that they're doing. And again, all of this helps them refine their algorithm.
Precision isn't the only company working on brain-computer interfaces. There's Neuralink, there's Boston Scientific, Medtronic. Last week, in fact, Neuralink introduced the first patient to receive its brain-computer interface. How does the approach from Precision differ from Neuralink's?
Precision's approach is to place its interface on the surface of the brain. And that's a decision on their part because, as I mentioned earlier, they want to be as minimally invasive as possible. The Neuralink device is embedded into the tissue of the brain. It's actually the electrodes that pick up the brain signals are threaded into the brain tissue for Neuralink. Their goal is very similar, but their method is somewhat different.
Precision is working on this study now. When do they hope to submit for FDA approval?
They're doing this in stages. So the first thing they intend to do is to get something called a 510K clearance. This will allow them to temporarily install their brain-computer interface into patients for up to 30 days. The next phase for them would be to apply for pre-market approval from the FDA. And this would pave the way for their permanent implant, the wireless device that will help paralyzed individuals operate a computer. Precision hopes to get pre-market approval for its permanent wireless device by 2028.
That was our Science Bureau Chief, Joe Craven McGinty. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Catherine Millsup. I'm Alex Osola for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.